This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, well, let's not waste any more time. Just in time for spring, Nando's launched a deliciously refreshing line of frosted drinks, which should keep South Africans cool under the collar as temperatures start to rise. Speaking of which, Justice, your collar does look hot today.
Oh, I'm feeling hot today. Oh. Why am I in a tie?
Nando's new exclusive range of frosted drinks come in two delicious cheeky flavors, strawberry lemonade and wicked lemonade, which perfectly complement the delicious flavors of our peri-peri chicken. With a crushed, smooth, refreshing consistency, it could be best described as a lip-smacking premium slush that is a delicious thirst quencher. At just $24.90, you have no reason not to make it the perfect partner to your Nando's flame-grilled peri-peri meal, whether dining in or taking it away. Taking it away, nice. Justice? You've taken away the tie. You now mean business.
Just before we carry on, Justice, I'm down here, as I said earlier, to celebrate Nando's 30th birthday. And back in 1987 when they started, they weren't going to call it Nando's. They were actually going to call it Fernando's. Uh-huh. Unlucky for them, the name was already registered to a guest house owner, so they couldn't use it. Hmm. And so they settled on Nando's, uh-huh, which is the diminutive for Fernando and also the name of his son. Uh-huh. And there are other things that didn't work on the, you know, in the beginning in the way that they were meant to, like selling calamari. Believe it or not, the seafood treat was on the menu of the first restaurant in Rosettenville. Hmm. Not surprisingly, the peri-peri chicken stole the show, and it was never to be seen again. That's the calamari. Now, if you imagine selling calamari was odd, there was a stage when we sold something even odder at Nando's: socks.
What?
Yep, you read that right. They were once sold from vending machines in the restaurants. Yep. Well, in case you were wondering what the link was to Nando's, it's simple. The socks were branded "No Chili Feet." How do you like that?
Well, that's the second sock. That's the second sock reference of the show today.
So there's lots to talk about, right, Justice?
Yeah, so much to talk about. It's nonstop. I have to say, you know, I like it when I have some news for our listeners. When I can say, think about this and then think about what it means, and down the line, maybe it happens and maybe it doesn't. So for me, you know, I've been wondering, I don't know if you guys have, the past few weeks, I think 2 weeks ago, I interviewed Bantu Holomisa, the leader of the UDM. Bantu Holomisa was interesting because he kept on winking at me on air. Well, you know,
well,
I don't know how many.
You're a very handsome man.
I know. It was very weird. It was very odd. Why is he winking at me?
Yeah.
But every time I spoke to Bantu Holomisa about, so, you know, what's the 2019 coalitions look like? And he'd say, well, it's going to look very different, and wink and wink. And I thought, I mean, I'm handsome, yes, but, you know, it's Bantu Holomisa, he's the general, you know. So I went home and thought about it. Then this week I interviewed Danny Mpofu, the national chairperson of the EFF. And I said, why are you guys so cross with the DA? And he said, you know, the DA thinks that because it's the biggest and the leader of the opposition sort of, that they can just tell us anything. Well, you know, things might look very different in 2019. Then I went home and thought again. So I started asking people in the ANC, what's going on here? And then I keep on being told that quite a few people inside the ANC, inside the Veterans League, in some of the other leagues of the ANC, are disillusioned and are beginning to talk to other people about, is there a possibility of another breakaway from the ANC? Remember in 2007, COPE was born.
Yes.
After the 2007 Polokwane conference. After the 2012 Mangaung conference, EFF broke away with Julius Malema and Floyd Chivambu and others. And now this is the third ANC conference that looks like it might bear a new political party. So I think we should all keep a lookout. If someone, you're in a nightclub somewhere here and someone winks at you, it means a political party is coming. Now, seriously speaking, I believe
that is pretty interesting. I'll tell you why. Because yesterday morning, we were meant to record an interview with Bantu Holomisa. Mm. And I know he was in the Constitutional Court just the day before.
Yeah.
with the EFF, and clearly this is why he had to cancel yesterday, because Sia and I were both annoyed that he'd cancelled, but obviously plans are afoot to launch something new.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I'm not sure that both the EFF and Bantu Holomisa, they're certainly together and they're standing together against what they perceive as the DA's arrogance. But I think they know something about what's going on in the background inside the ANC. And I think that there's trouble brewing for the ANC, with people saying, actually, whether it's Cyril Ramaphosa, Zweli Mkhize, whoever it might be, this is not the answer to the ANC's problems. And they think that the ANC is so captured or stolen that that it may be time to find a new home. It's a dangerous path, because if you think about, COPE was such a hopeful beginning with 1.4 million people voting for them in 2009.
Yeah, Gareth is one of them.
There you go.
I was also one of them.
We were suckered.
We were, because we were very bitterly disappointed when they very quickly fell apart after that.
Yeah. Well, you know,
I should have voted for them, but just not told anyone. But I went ahead and told everyone. I was like, this is the future of this country. Finally, a party that doesn't have baggage. This would be amazing. What a great new start. And then, Mbazi Mashiloa and Musiwa Lekota started fighting like that, and it just deteriorated so quickly.
No, I think starting a political party, think about Dr. Mampela Rampele. I mean, you know, I'm quite interested. My friend Makosi Khoza, you know, people really think she's amazing and fantastic. But I kind of see why she's stuck in the ANC. That road, Jacob Zuma once told people that it's cold outside of the ANC. And he wasn't all wrong. The ANC remains establishment, remains such a big part of our political, historical landscape that is going to be hard to unseat it. That said, I think people will be more careful, more considered about a new political play. So I think that there will be a new splinter group. I believe that if in December, and I've said this before, if in December the Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma faction of the ANC wins, for many people inside the ANC, it will mean that what we have today, what the Jacob Zuma administration is doing, has just replicated itself to continue through to 2019 and through to 2024. And therefore, that is when you're not going to see a splinter, but a substantial block of the ANC leave.
But now, what about the Cyril Ramaphosa faction, Justice? Because, you know, we saw over the weekend and how, with the way that this week started, there were all sorts of allegations being leveled against the deputy president. Mm. Was this all in an attempt to make him look bad? Was it a successful attempt to make him look bad?
Well, first of all, I think that's the faction that would walk away, actually. I think with all the plans, particularly among the veterans, whether you look at all those 101 veterans who've been writing letters to President Zuma saying you need to step down your, as they say in Zulu, yazilisa, you're making us lose, man. You're like Stuart Baxter. Basically, what is going on with that faction is that I think that Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, let's say you are Derek Hanekom, Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma wins, what is your future in the ANC? Let's say you are Mcebisi Jonas or Pravin Gordhan or Makosi Khoza. These are not all, by the way, necessarily Cyril people. They are anti-Zuma people. But let's say you are the ANC in Gauteng, or you are Zamani Saul in the Northern Cape, and you're the leader of the ANC there, and then Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma wins. I think that they're going to find themselves in a very uncomfortable position, because everything, if Cyril Ramaphosa is right that the Secret Service is being used to hack his emails, find his alleged
concubines or whatever, and so forth and so forth. It means that he's stuck in that world. Everything that he does will be viewed with suspicion. He'll be followed up and so forth and so forth. I think that he will be encouraged by many that the ANC that you love and have known for so long is finished. And maybe it's time for you to go back to what used to be the UDF, for example, which is what COPE essentially tried to revive. And I think that would be the case. But Mabali, you're asking me about the allegations themselves and what they are, what they mean. COSATU was interesting. It said that we are not electing a pope. We electing a leader of the ANC, and we're interested in his policies on workers and so forth and so forth. I think they are being disingenuous. For you and me in this room, yes, the private lives of our leaders, we're not asking. Cyril Ramaphosa is not Kenneth Meshwe. Mr. Meshwe, Reverend Meshwe, is the leader of the ACDP, the African Christian Democratic Party. They stand up every day and said, "You fornicators!" They stand up.
You will have a flame coming out of your funnel.
Oh, no, no, no.
The
no,
Lord's going to come down! And that right. sort of thing. Now, when a political leader stands up and says that and says, "I'm against abortion," or "I'm against infidelity," "I'm against whatever," all these things, then you can hold him accountable on those. When you have a leader of the ANC, which is a very progressive, very liberal party, having consensual sex with other people, I don't know that you have a case in standing up against him. I think Cyril Ramaphosa may have a case around issues of blessers because he stood up and said those things. All that said, my view is that anyone who raises their hand and is a serious contender in this race for leadership in the ANC will find themselves on the front page of one or other newspaper. With their infidelities and so forth on the front page, but does
and
it work?
Justice, can I just interrupt? I saw you retweet something and comment on an article by Max Dupree earlier this week. That your problem is not with Cyril's morality with regard to his personal life, which I mean, as you say, any country they're going to dig up this kind of dirt.
Exactly.
If the security services are involved, we should all be worried, because if they can do this to the deputy president of the party, they can do it to any of us.
You know, there's a story we didn't talk about, Gareth, and absolutely right there. There's a story we didn't talk about, and it says that there are 70,000 people in South Africa whose phone records were requested by the state so that they can check who Mabale has been calling, how many times. And they can say to Mabale, why are you calling Gareth 29 times a day? Why are you calling Sia 5 times a day? Why are you calling Justice 50 times a day? And so forth and so forth. So you know, there's an issue about the security services and what they're doing and whether it's right or not.
But my question was about your retweeting of Max Dupree's article, because you might not have a problem with his morality vis-a-vis his personal life, but you certainly have a problem with the fact that he's been part of this rotten administration since the Mangaung conference, and that he put his weight behind Jacob Zuma then and has helped him ever since to maintain some semblance of credibility in this administration. He can't now tell us that he's the antidote.
I think that's the question that Ramaphosa has to ask. In 2012... 2 days before the Mangaung conference, he could have gone in with Kgalema Motlanthe, and he didn't. He went in with Jacob Zuma. Since December 2012, Cyril Ramaphosa has been part of the rot. He has stood by and folded his hands while the Guptas have flourished, while state-owned enterprises have collapsed. He has been... What Cyril Ramaphosa did was to give his respectability, his credibility to the Jacob Zuma administration to allow it, essentially, to loot. He was cover for them, and he never said a word. if you listen to what he had to say, for example, on the immoral granting of diplomatic immunity to Grace Mugabe yesterday, there's a man who flip-flops when he has to stand on principle. He didn't stand on principle. He mouthed platitudes about, oh, you know, we are against the against violence against women. Well, a woman was violated, was beaten up in a hotel in Sandton. We all know this, by the First Lady of Zimbabwe. And this government allowed that criminal to get out and granted that criminal diplomatic immunity. Cyril Ramaphosa, for the second time in 2 weeks, was in parliament defending that decision. This is what he has done over the past 5 years. He has cloaked the Zuma administration. He has perfumed it so that the smell doesn't rise higher than what it has so far. And so this is where the problem lies with Cyril Ramaphosa. That said, I think that that campaign to, what shall we say, expose him, has fallen flat. It's one thing for Kenneth Mishra perhaps to say, oh, you're a fornicator. But for the Jacob Zuma camp to run around saying, oh, look how bad he is, with all the scandals that have...
there's a saying for this, so the pot calling the kettle black, right?
Exactly. It's just too sad for words. So I think Cyril Ramaphosa will survive this one. I think he's still the front runner. I think that, in fact, his campaign may have been fortified somewhat. It's forced him to come out and actually say, I want to be president and I am being targeted because of this, and so forth and so forth. And
based on what you said at the beginning of this discussion, where Bantu Holomisa and a bunch of other ANC, ex-ANC perhaps, veterans will leave and start something new, if that is the case, who would lose most from that new thing? Would it be Cyril? Would it be Kosasana? Because the ANC will find itself much weakened, but this new party will also take away votes potentially from the front runner.
It will. The key, I think, is that if Cyril wins, the damage to the ANC will be slightly less than if he loses. If he loses, the ANC is looking at a split. If Cyril Ramaphosa wins, it's more a splinter. And perhaps not even a total disaster for the ANC.
So in other words, the very argument that was used at the vote of no confidence the other day in Parliament is the argument that should be used within the ANC caucus and within the ANC's NEC for people to vote for Cyril. If you voted for President Zuma to stay,
so that
by the same logic, you should vote for Cyril to win so that the ANC doesn't break in half.
That should be the argument. But think about it. For many, let's say you had 198 people in that vote for Jacob Zuma to stay. I think people should be jumping up and down. The ANC has 62% of the vote, but only just under 50% voted for its president to stay as president of the republic. It tells you something about President Zuma and his support inside the ANC. Anyway, people like Gwede Mantashe are interesting to me because they stand there, they say, oh, the unity of the movement. When they raise an issue, Jacob Zuma dares them to go ahead with that issue, with that motion to remove him, for example, saying, well, you'll be around, you'll be the guy who broke up the ANC, so vote for me to keep the ANC united. Down the line, what actually happens is that he stays in power. So you're absolutely right. If people are interested in the unity of the ANC, then they would vote for Cyril Ramaphosa. But the problem is that it's factionalized, and many out of those 198, let's say 100 are hardline Jacob Zuma and Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma supporters. They are not bothered by this unity of the ANC business. They want to win. So they will most likely still go ahead and vote for their candidate, and that unity story might collapse even before we get to a point where there's a discussion at all.
I don't like to refer to this too much because you're our guy in this corner, but that same Max Dupree article, he used the term outfoxed when he spoke about how Cyril has been outplayed by Jacob Zuma almost every step of the way. And this is supposedly a man who's, you know, smart and forthright and clever and politically very cunning. He was one of the people who helped put together our very, very complex constitution. And yet he has been outplayed politically. I mean, Jacob Zuma politically as a strategist is a master.
He is up there with the very best. He's outplayed everyone, including all of us South Africans. Think about it. I mean, in 2005 in June, Thabo Mbeki goes to parliament. He gives a speech in which he says, because of the problems that the deputy president faces, I have released him of his duties to go off and deal with them. This is when Jacob Zuma was facing, in fact, this is when Shabir Sheikh had been convicted of fraud, corruption, racketeering, or whatever it was, for giving Jacob Zuma bribes. Well, the next week, the Prime Minister of India was in South Africa, and Thabo Mbeki and then Phumzile Mlambo Ngcuka, who was now the President of South Africa at the time, went and addressed the rally in KZN with him. What happened? The ANC Youth League had in KwaZulu-Natal had already been mobilized to disrupt and throw stones and jeer and heckle at that rally. It went on from there. Jacob Zuma sat there saying, I'm a victim. And he played the victim card brilliantly for the next 2.5 years. And in December 2007, he had outfoxed, he had outplayed, outmaneuvered, outgunned Thabo Mbeki, and he won the 2007 conference 60% votes to him, only 40% to Thabo Mbeki. After that, it was just downhill all the way for anyone who stood up to Jacob Zuma. He outplayed and outfoxed them. First of all, he went to the security agencies and made sure that his own people were installed in there. He got rid of the Scorpions. By 2009, the Scorpions had been disbanded. Today, you're wondering why Anoj Singh from Eskom or whoever else named in the Gupta leaks is not going to jail. It's because Jacob Zuma disbanded the Scorpions in 2008 so that they wouldn't go after him. He got people inside the security establishment to give him tapped phone calls in which people discussed his case. And so those 783 charges were dropped just before he became president in April 2009. He has outplayed the very best. Thabo Mbeki, Esau Pahad, Terale Kota, even Julius Malema. He realized that this young man is a bit of a threat to me. He sent other people, the ANCs. Today we're jumping up and down and saying, oh, Cyril Ramaphosa, Derek Hanekom, they are so amazing. It was Derek Hanekom's National Disciplinary Committee which fired Julius Malema from the ANC. It was Cyril Ramaphosa who was the appeals chairman who fired Julius Malema from the ANC. And who was standing behind all that? Who made them do it? It was Jacob Zuma. He has outfoxed and outgunned everyone, including Cyril Ramaphosa. With Cyril Ramaphosa, Cyril Ramaphosa's reputation, his, oh, I wrote the constitution, oh, I negotiated the 1994 settlement, oh, I did this and all that, it has been used as cover. While Jacob Zuma and the Gupta stole, looted, corrupted the state, Cyril Ramaphosa stood there telling us, it's not too bad. Well, look how bad it is today. So it's very hard for many people to take Cyril Ramaphosa that seriously when he says, oh, we will fight corruption. Oh, it's corrupt to use the state agencies. They have been used this way since 2012 when he became deputy president of the ANC, since 2014 when he became deputy president of the country.
Justice, we're almost out of time, but there is one more story that's also been developing throughout the week, since the weekend, in fact. So you mentioned Julius Malema, and, you know, yesterday he was receiving all sorts of congratulations for his honours degree, da 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 da. But what's interesting was that at that graduation ceremony, he started speaking about how him and the ANC Youth League Secretary General, Cindy Somagaga, had several meetings together. And, you know, news reports this morning saying that Julius had actually offered him a position within the EFF. But the young man has now lost his life. What is going on in KZN, and why are politicians losing their lives so brutally?
You know, it's so sad that we talk about it and and nothing much gets done. Not many people get arrested, have been arrested for all these killings in KwaZulu-Natal. The saddest fact is that this has been going on for years now. Cindy Somagaga is high profile, and so suddenly there's Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, Sihle Zikalala, all sorts of people pitching up at his family home saying, oh, we've come to bring condolences. These are the same people who have been crisscrossing KwaZulu-Natal, trying to drum up votes, and have not said anything about the fact that on a weekly basis, one or two or three sometimes, local councillors are being killed. They're not being killed by the IFP or the NFP or the DA or the EFF. It's ANC members killing ANC members over positions, over money. If you are the councillor for Bryanston, you don't need a qualification. You don't need to be like Julius Malema and have an honours degree. You don't need to have a certificate. All you have to do is be popular in the ANC, because the ANC wins in Umzimkulu or in Umbumbulu or in, well, not in Nkandla, they don't win there. So what you have is a situation where it's easy to become a councillor. The only way you become the next councillor is to get rid of the one who sits. There's another layer of people who are being killed, and they are municipal office officials. So the municipal manager, the chief financial officer of Umzimkulu and so forth. And those are the people who sit there in their offices trying to run a clean government. And what happens is that the council arrives and says, I see the tender board has refused to give this tender to Justice and Mabale. You need to do something so that it moves to them. And you say, no, but the other guys have done the work before. They've got experience. They're BEE compliant. They're this and so forth and so forth. Well, what happens there? What happens there is that essentially people are gotten rid of, or the local councillor has gotten rid of. That local councillor is going to be replaced by another ANC councillor. And so a faction develops around the Justice Malala faction in that municipality and the Mabale Moloi faction, and then we take you out, and I'm the popular guy. I get into the job. It has been happening with such frequency. I think the last number I saw, I think over the past 5 years, must be about 400 people killed. Low level, no fuss, just keeps on going on. We made a bit of a fuss about it, and you'll remember this, Gareth, last year in the run-up to the local elections, when people were being killed fast and furious in KwaZulu-Natal in the run-up to August 3. And then after that, we stopped. But the killings did not stop. In just this, in the Mzimkulu municipality where Cindy Somagaga lived, five people have been killed. Five councillors have been killed. Now, think about that. A councillor gets killed. Another one gets killed. No one is arrested. There was a story in the Sunday Times this past weekend in which the wife of one of those killed stood up and said, but this is such a small community. Why hasn't anyone come up and said, I know this and I know someone who said something. Why is it not being exposed? But it's not being exposed, and that's where we find ourselves with a big, big problem. Will it be solved? I'm not convinced it will be solved. I think that we're going to see more killings. I think that the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal reflects what might happen to the ANC nationally, and it's that it's eating itself up. It's ANC leaders who are throwing mud at Zweli Mkhize and saying he's linked to oil deals. It's ANC leaders who are finding a little something to throw at Cyril Ramaphosa, saying that he's a womanizer and so forth. It's ANC leaders who will find...
Politics has become a very dangerous game in KwaZulu-Natal. I wonder how many people are starting to think that they should have gone into private business, perhaps, because at least in private business, the worst that can happen to you is you'll run out of money. In politics, you could lose your life.
Sadly, in KwaZulu-Natal, what we're seeing and what we have is that private business is linked to politics. So what you see largely is a situation where people, how shall I put it? People in business say, I would like that piece of business. But to get that piece of business, particularly from government, where government is dominant, you have to have connections there. So business and government are inextricably linked. And sadly, business people are probably involved in this. If I want to build a road from point A to point B, I need municipal approval, then I need a government tender, and that becomes an issue for governance in there. So I expect more killings, not less. I think that we're faced with a serious problem here, and sadly I don't think we are at the end of what we're going through with this violence.
Just before you run, I know you've got to go. Just very briefly, your comments on the GDP numbers being up. I saw a couple of ANC supporters going, you see, we told you, Malusi Gigaba is much better than Pravin.
I think that they have to prepare themselves for the fact that this is a long road. We will need way more than a recovery like this one to say that we've turned the corner and people will begin to get jobs and so forth. Let's imagine we stay on 2.5% growth, which for this year we won't make. We'll probably make 1% or even less, 0.5%, as some economists have said. That means that the jobs unemployment number stays the same. It means that 9 million people stay on the streets and we still have pretty much the same situation. What we need is a government that has a plan. And at the moment, Cyril Ramaphosa said yesterday, people are just not implementing the NDP as it should be implemented. So we're stuck here. We need a long-term plan. We need to stick to it, and we need to stop all the thieving and stealing from SOEs. If that happens, then we will be on winning ways. But right now, it is understandable that business confidence is low, consumer confidence is low, and I think that we're still not doing the right things or sending the right signals on the economy. I just want to say, you look at the GDP number and then you look at the Bureau for Economic Research's the Psyche Business Confidence Index that was released yesterday. It says business people are pessimistic and are as pessimistic today as they were in 1985, when B.W. Botha failed to deliver the speech that would turn things around in South Africa, the Rubicon speech. And so people just thought, things are not going to get better. I actually don't think we are that bad, but that's what the science and the numbers say, and we have to take serious cognizance of that.
All right, Justice, thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you very, very much. Another Burning Platform next week, Thursday. We can cover things like the DA coalition governments and whether they're under threat. There's lots of other stuff to talk about, as always.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. And, of course, this is brought to you by Nando's. Just in time for spring, they've launched a deliciously refreshing line of frosted drinks, which can keep you cool under the collar as temperatures start to rise. And I love this time of year because it starts getting warmer. Nando's new exclusive range of frosted drinks comes in two delicious cheeky flavors, strawberry limeade, wicked lemonade, which perfectly complement the delicious flavor of our peri-peri chicken. With a crushed, smooth, refreshing consistency, it could best be described as a lip-smacking premium slush that is a delicious thirst quencher. At just $24.90, you have no reason not to make it the perfect partner to any Nando's flame-grilled peri-peri meal, whether dining in or taking it away. The Burning Platform is brought to you by Nando's, turning 30 this year.
This is CliffCentral.com.